Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, what's going on there, pal?
We saw you at the hockey game on.
Do I know you guys?
I'm Ryan Whitney. I got a drink named after me.
Not a big deal.
Pink Whitney? That's what I thought. See you, fellas.
I invented the thing, you pigeon.
Pink Whitney for legendary moments.
This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new zero sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 306 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by Pink Whitney. From our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka here in the Barstool Sports Podcast family. What's up, gang? Hopefully everybody's doing well. Just want to remind you, in case you forgot or weren't aware, it's interview-only episodes for the entirety of November, and we have another pair of interviews on tap for you today. Sounds like everyone enjoyed Tuck and Turk last week, so we thank you very much for listening and tuning in. On this episode, we have longtime pro Jeremy Yablonski, and we also have Dylan Playfair from the very popular TV show Letterkenny. So we got some good stuff coming for you.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And now, enjoy Jeremy Yablonski. Well, our next guest is a Saskatchewan guy who played hockey professionally for 13 seasons. Though he was never drafted, he did make it to the NHL as a 23-year-old with the St. Louis Blues and had a fight during his appearance at the National. He's won both a Calder Cup and a Kelly Cup while protecting his teammates in both the Coast and the AHL. He's also won 6 Golden Gloves Boxing Championships in up in Canada. Thanks so much for joining us on Spittin' Chiclets, Jeremy Yablonski.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate all this.
Absolutely, man. A resume like that, I definitely wouldn't want to meet you in a dark alley.
I'm just really a big teddy bear.
Well, unless he could buy something from you.
I did meet him in a dark alley, but it was the fucking Binghamton Arena.
Oh, yeah. Me and Biz sure had our boats out on the ice. That's for darn sure.
Well, you bambied me the first one, and then I'm like, okay.
Did he, Biz? He bambied you?
Oh, my goodness. And I got the first one out of the way, so I was like, hey, I had my guy. I did my job. And then you fucking ran with one of our guys again, and I had to fight you a second time. And I got
I remember that game, too. I think it was that you had a big tall guy on your team, Mormina or somebody. And he was flying. I just buried him on the boards. And as soon as I did that, I knew you were on the ice. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is coming. I turned my shoulder right away. And sure enough, you're right there.
Hey, I talk about this all the time. So that was the year where they introduced those tighter fitting jerseys. And you were skating around the ice and your head was like a cherry tomato. And it looked like a choke chain on you because it was so tight because you were so jacked.
Yeah, they were like literally like fitted jerseys, like, you know, like you get fitted for a tux. They're like fitted on the side. And yeah, they were snug.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, we've mentioned you, as I said, quite a few times. Of course, you've got a long history of not only fighting, but playing in a lot of different places, Russia being one of them. We'll get into that. But, you know, growing up, I mean, R.A. touched on it, gold glove boxer. I would imagine that that's where you got all your skills to transfer over to the ice.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and obviously hockey was always my first love, like probably most of us. But I had an old coach, Jim Kirby was his name. Jim Kirby passed on a few years ago, but he actually used to train Lennox Lewis at one time, way back in the day, you know, before Lennox Lewis actually won the Olympics for Canada. And he retired and he moved out to Meadow Lake and he ran the Legion. And we, you know, one of our buddies of ours, a friend of ours, got him to open up a boxing club. And so we just kind of like, heck yeah, I'll do that. You know, I was young, God, you know, 12, 13 years old. But, you know, and then just got into boxing, and it was something I did alongside hockey, and I just loved it. And it was one of those things, right? And, you know, you can only take it so far. And obviously, you know, getting into junior hockey, you couldn't really keep with it. And it's not that I wanted to make a career out of it. I just liked to do it for the time I was able to.
Good old Sasky boy. I mean, you said hockey is definitely your first love. Who was your team growing up? Or were you even like a huge NHL fan?
Yeah, definitely. You know, so Meadow Lake's about 4 hours from Edmonton. So, you know, I always cheered for the Oilers, right? Growing up, the 80s and stuff, watching all the Oilers. So that was definitely my team growing up.
Yeah, boy, I want to ask, which boxes did you grow up watching or rooting for? I'm curious which era you kind of came of age in boxing-wise.
You know, I'm trying to think back now. You know, obviously Mike Tyson was big to watch back then, right?
Yeah.
He was young. He was coming in. So, you know, watching, it was kind of that kind of an era of the boxing where there was still a lot of bigger heavyweights around, right? Like now there's still heavyweights around, but there wasn't the numbers there were back then. Although Mike was, you know, knocking the shit out of everybody back then. But I did love his style. He's ferocious, man. No, he was one of a kind.
Absolutely incredible boxer. Are you still a fan, or has the sports shadiness kind of pushed you away?
No, I definitely still a fan. Actually, what's pretty cool is when I got to Russia, I became very good friends with Alexander Povetkin and Denis Lebedev. And Povetkin actually just won the WCB heavyweight championship just a couple weeks ago again. He lost he lost it to somebody previously, and then he was coming back for it, and he lost a fight to Klitschko. And then he had two other fights come back, and so he won that again. So I'm not sure where he's going to go from there, but I definitely, you know, since I know him, I do root for him.
How did you become buddies with those guys? Just running around with the owner of VTS?
Yeah. So the owners of VTS, he has a boxing over there in Russia as well. So VTS Boxing, right? That's where Povetkin and Lebedev fight out of. And so they're right in Chekhov. They got a great facility there for boxing. And so when we had a lot of recovery days over at, like at the Banya and stuff, on recovery days, they would always show up, and they're just great, humble guys. They really are. And both of them, you know, they both hit like tanks. I've seen them train in the gym, and I'm just like, damn, you know, pro heavyweight boxers hit at a different caliber. Like,
yeah, but you seem like the guy who's always willing and actually excited to get into scraps. When you were growing up playing minor and then in transitioning to junior, were you kind of always the guy that was doing that? Or at what point did it really turn on in order to be the enforcer on the ice?
Yeah, you know, so obviously fighting, you know, I did a little bit of fighting, you know, before junior hockey, right? Triple A midget. I played in Prince Albert. And then, you know, when I went to camp, you know, so I was drafted to the WHL to Kelowna Rockets. And during the year, I got traded to the Edmonton Ice. That was Edmonton Ice, who is now Kootenay Ice, who we went there later and won. We won the whole CHL that one year there as well. But that was at camp, you know. So I was running around. My whole thing was, well, still to this day, you know it. I can skate pretty quick, and I can hit well. You know, I'm definitely not a goal scorer, but that was always my thing. Just work hard, skate hard, you know, be a presence on the ice. So I did that at camp for the Edmonton Ice. And so obviously I was hitting people, and people wanted to fight. So I just kept – that's when it really turned on in a big way, where you're fighting multiple times a game, you know, multiple times a year. That's when it really clicked over to, you know, this is definitely going to be a part of my game. And I truthfully loved it. I enjoyed it, so –
Well, I was talking to your former teammate and buddy, a good friend of mine. He's been on the show, Josh Hennessy. And he was telling me, he's like, yo, fucking Yabo. He goes, nobody knows. Everyone knows how tough he is. Nobody knows he was the fastest player in the world, straight line. He just turned like a tugboat.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have, you know, I could turn okay, but not like, you know, not like Henny or anybody. But, yeah, I'd always win a lot of the Union NHL in Ottawa or Nashville. Yeah. We do, like, some speed stuff. And, you know, I was always, like, first or second. I remember in Ottawa, it was me and Anton Vermette. We were like 1 and 2, and people were like, yeah, they're like, you're fucking 240 pounds. They're like, you know, and that's just, I'm really big in fitness and training, and I have been my whole life. Right. So I really got into that big and learning like how to become explosive. Right. That was a big thing I trained on probably 2 years before I was in Binghamton there. And then, you know, after I still train to this day. So I really enjoy that part of it.
I'm wondering, because sometimes, you know, the stats online you read about somebody can be incorrect, but 99-2000, did you play anywhere? Because it doesn't have you listed as playing anywhere that year. It was after Kootenay. It was after you played in Edmonton for a year in the dub, and then Kootenay for a year, and then 2 years later you were on Phoenix Mustangs.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh shit, I don't know how they have that on there. So I played in Edmonton, and they still don't have one game on there. I've seen it a few places. So I was a 20-year-old in Kootenay. I got a big suspension in the exhibition, and it was carried over. So I got traded to the Seattle for fighting. We had a big line brawl, you know, big line brawl. And so I beat up a couple guys, you know, and then I got a little suspension for that. And then we had too many 20-year-olds, so I got traded to Seattle, to the Thunderbirds. And then, so I finished out my suspension, I played one game there, and I shit you not, I scored two fucking goals. Like, and this is why I scored two goals, and I didn't even fight. But at the end of the game, I was in the box, the game ended, and then somebody ran right by our boards, and our whole team's on the ice. So then I started, you know, obviously grab that guy, you know, give this guy a fucking beating, you know, for what he did. And then the league saw that as like coming out of the box. So then I got suspended for like 12 or like 15 games. And, you know, Chenault was the coach, and Dean, great guy. And he's like, oh yeah, we're going to have to do it. I have to bring another 20-year-old in. And then I ended up going over to Phoenix to play. And that's how I got there.
Could you have ever imagined that it would turn into a professional career? Like, did you have that in sight, or were you over the moon when it kind of snowballed and you ended up playing that many years career pro?
You know, definitely. You know, obviously, you know, things go by fast now that I look at it. I always want to play hockey, you know, always want to try and make it to the NHL. That was the goal, right? And I knew I was going to have to work for it, right? I knew I was going to have to grind it out in leagues and make a presence year after year and then hopefully get up there. And that's just kind of what I did. And definitely, you know, once I got, you know, got to play a little bit in St. Louis, and then, you know, I just kept, you know, stayed in the American League and just try to keep working my way in and, you know, finding my way up, right? And that's just the way it went.
Yeah, but you mentioned that suspension, and I actually reached out to one of your former teammates, Derek Nesbitt, who reminded me of another one. So he was with the Idaho Steelhead, and you weren't on this road trip. They went up to Alaska, and I don't know if they were the defending champs, but they were bullying the Idaho Steelhead. So they ended up coming back to Idaho on a road trip. And yourself and Matt Nickerson, people got to go YouTube this. You guys ended up destroying an entire line on your own. You ended up getting suspended for what I think is the rest of the season. And in the midst of that, you line up a UFC fight in order to basically get the whole fucking fan base into it.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right, too. The boys went up. So what happened, I think what really happened, I had hurt my MCL a little bit, so I had to miss like a week off, right? And then Nickerson, he might have been either suspended or they didn't take him on the trip. They go up to Alaska, and, yeah, they did a line brawl against our team. We had no tough guys in the lineup. And actually, our goalie, they give our goalie a concussion. So, you know, hindsight, their next game is back down in Boise. And, you know, me and Nickerson are both playing. And I'm just like, you know, I told Nicky, like, you know, just, hey, we'll find a time to do it. You know, and we literally went out that shift. And I was like, okay, if I get a chance, there was some tall guy, I forget his name, but I was like, I'm going to try and get a hold of this fucking guy. I said, and then we'll do this, right? And then, so we did it. I mean, yeah, and it got a little nuts. You know, we just started grabbing guy after guy and just, you know, try to just destroy their whole line because they were just all a bunch of fucking fake-ass guys, right? Nobody, they didn't have any real big heavyweights, right? And so we're just going to take care of business old school way, you know? And then we did.
So the funniest part of the story, though, is you guys end up getting suspended. And by the way, Derek Nesbitt said it was a big turning point for you guys in the season. You guys ended up going on some crazy run, and that was the year you guys won the Kelly Cup. But what was funny about it is how that ended up turning into what I believe is your first ever UFC event, which happened during that season. Could you tell the whole story behind that?
Yeah, definitely. So one thing I've always done in the off season is I've always had boxing as just part of my training, right? I would always do that. When I moved out to Boise, because I played there years ago. And so that was a home for me for 12 years before I've come out to Dallas here for the last four. Right. And so, when I moved there, I found some guys to train with, and it was all like these MMA guys. And, the summer before I was training, and just, it was something I always did, like, oh, you know, yeah, you should get in a fight. And I was like, oh, you know, I can't, like, I have a, you know, contract. And I was like, it's kind of hard to do that, you know, with hockey. Right. So then that happened, and I was like, well, hey, let me see, you know, I'll see if I can get in a fight. And then, you know, sure enough, I did. I was like, they lined me one up. And so that was the first time I actually got in the ring for an MMA fight. So it was definitely fun. I mean, it wasn't much of a fight, but, you know.
You're being modest. You're being modest. You knocked the guy out in 17 seconds.
Yeah, well, you know, all three of my first fights were like that. You know, they went pretty quick, but it was fun, you know. And it's one of those things, like we all know, in boxing as well, you know, the training's the hardest part. And I got to work with some guys that were amazing, like Nate Pettit. He lives out in Vegas. He trained, like, with Randy Couture's. He's, like, his trainer. So these are guys, like, who were in Boise, you know, and they've all, you know, fought in the UFC at the highest level. And so I got to work with these guys, and they just worked the shit out of you. And I got to learn so much from those guys. It was amazing. Eric Smith was a NCAA fucking champion wrestler out in Iowa. That guy was like, I was 240. He was like 220, and he picked me up, and he would just fucking smash me on the mats, like, time after time. His wrestling was so good. One time he fucking put me through the wall, and on parts of the wall, you have the mats, and then the other mat goes up along the wall. Well, he picked me up and smashed me through the wall, through the mat one time, and we knocked some of the roof down. And I was like, dude, like, he was a great guy, but I mean, he just toyed with me. It was, I got to learn so much from him.
So Derek Nesbitt also was describing how they had you promote the fight, and they ended up selling the whole arena out and giving you like an extra bonus for it. You had all the Steelhead guys walking you out to the mat and with their jerseys on, and they had your jersey in hand. So after you knocked the guy out, who, by the way, the guy had an absolute barrel on him. Did he?
Yeah, he was some karate guy.
He was the Zamboni driver.
Yeah, so Rudy was his first name. I forget his last name. But so at first I was supposed to fight a Russian guy out of a camp in Utah. And that's who they were going to have come down. And they said that he did get injured. So like a week out, I didn't even think I was fighting, actually. I didn't have anybody to fight. And then literally the day before, the promoter called, hey, we got a guy that'll fight. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, let's still do it. And then it was him. And I, at first I looked at his record, actually. And I was like, this guy's like fucking like 30 fights or something. And I was like, Jesus, fuck. I'm like, who are you guys throwing me in with? Right. I'm like, all right, let's go. But I seen him and I was like, dude, this guy's like got a barrel on him. Right. So, but I never, you overlook an opponent. It's the worst thing you can do. Right. Cause I knew this guy had a big karate background. Right. So I'm like, well, I got to just watch myself. This guy's going to come with some crazy kick and take my jibs out and embarrass me.
Yeah, well, I want to go back to early in your career. You transition, you're in juniors, then you go into the pros, you're in the West Coast Hockey League for a bit, then you go to Peoria in the East Coast Hockey League. Was there any conversation with the higher-ups about getting to the NHL? Was that a carrot they dangled, or were you just kind of happy to be there at that point?
Yeah, definitely. You know, so at the time, you know, we were the West Coast Hockey League, right? So for my style of play, I want to get called up somewhere. You have to go out to the East Coast. That's where the tough teams were. Every team had fucking two or three heavyweights, like legitimately. And that's where you're going to make your mark. You know, that was one of the farm teams of the Blues, right? It was them, Worcester, and then in Massachusetts, and then St. Louis, right? That was our organization, right? So definitely, you know, talking with my agents at the time, they're like, hey, Abs, you know, you got all these other offers here in the West Coast now, but he's like, you got to go out east. And I was like, all right, let's do it, right? And I'm still, you know, I'm thankful for Jason Christie, who's the coach there, who I'm still, you know, really good friends with to this day. But he did a lot for me in my career at the start of it there to help me get pushed up and do what I had to do, you know, improving my game as well. You know, fighting's fighting. You still can't be a liability out there, right? So he helped me. So I give him a lot of credit, you know, at that time to give me the push, you know, get me called up to Worcester, get my first NHL contract. I'm definitely happy I made that move. That was the whole goal of that move, too.
Well, go ahead.
No, I just want to give him props with 154 penalty minutes in 24 games played, a little over 6.4 penalty minutes per game. Just want to give him daps for that.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I definitely knew my role. And, the league was tough over there then. Man, I'm telling you, there's two or three guys on a team, you know, and we had a tough team too. Should Trevor Gillies end up being on that team with me? That's where me and Gillies become like brothers. With me, Trevor Gillies, you know, we had this other little wiry fuck, Trevor Baker, who could actually play pretty well, but he was this wiry little skinny guy, probably never ate more than a sandwich for a meal in his life and never worked out, but he could really chuck him. We had Anthony Belza. We had a couple guys that were like, we were tough to play against.
Was Gillies doing those wild warm-ups when you were playing with him, where he was just squirting water all over his face, doing ballet against the boards and shit?
Oh, yeah. Shit, Gillies always has his routine. He has his routine, man. I give him credit. He has his routine. He knows what he needs to get ready, so fuck, props to him. I think it's great. You know, he doesn't, you know, people would like, oh, what are you doing out there? You know what? That's pretty good, because that guy didn't change a thing. He goes, I know what I need to do to get ready, so I'm going to do it. You know, and that's good.
Yeah, he didn't give a shit what people thought.
He didn't give a fuck, and that's good. Me neither. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to laugh at me? Come out here and fight me. You know, that was our thing. So many fucking talkers in the game, even back then. All these fucking guys want to yak and talk like they're something. It's like, come over here and drop your gloves. You know, I'll fucking embarrass you. And I was like, I'll embarrass your tough guy too, right? Like, come and do it. Like, I'm all about action. You want to talk, that's great. You know, but then, you know, and props to Biz for this example. Like, you know, you want to be a tough guy, do the fucking job. You want to talk, back it up. And that's one thing, Biz, I'll give you credit, you always did. I told somebody else in the podcast, somebody asked about me and you fighting. I was like, dude, that guy fucking showed up for work every fucking day without question. And that's the guys that I respect in the game.
Yeah, I got face for it now.
Snout.
Checks were nice, though.
Well, hey, yeah, but there's so many guys who you know, did what you did, played a long time, playing a tough physical, like, grind of a game, but you got that NHL game, so it makes me so happy. Like, do you remember a lot about that day? I mean, St. Louis had Pronger and Tkachuk and Doug Wade. It was, like, full of a bunch of legends.
Oh, it was
I'm assuming
great.
It was a
oh,
memorable
hell yeah.
day.
Fuck, Al MacInnis was there at the time, for fuck's sakes. He wasn't playing. He was still coming back from an injury, and I'll never forget. So, you know, I stayed up there for about a month and a half with St. Louis. You know, only played the one game there, though. And they're just like, yeah, you know, we'll see who plays. If they dress some tough guys, you're going to play. If not, you know, just do after morning skate. He's like, you know, you get bag skated and then do your workout, right? I was like, fuck, this is the life. Like, no problem, right? And I remember, so it was usually like me and Al MacInnis out there getting fucking bag skated. And I'll never forget, that guy would line up the whole blue line of pucks, like, you know, as close as can be. And he's like, yeah, so I'd just stand in front and he would just fucking rip clappers from the blue line and I would try and tip them in. I mean, he would do that day after day. And, you know, everybody wonders, you know, he had one of the best clappers in the league, right? I was pretty blessed, you know, to be where I was. And then, you know, I got to meet up with Dougie Wade later in the career with the Islanders when I was with those guys. But it was definitely a dream come true skating out behind those guys, you know, for a legitimate game. You know, it definitely was.
And your one game, too, you ended up fighting, we just had him on the podcast, Todd Fedoruk.
Yeah, Paul Fedoruk, great guy. Another guy that did his fucking job well. You know who I don't like on that team was, who the fuck was Brashear. The guy's the biggest fucking piece of shit. I don't like the guy. He's nothing but a fucking talker. You know what? He didn't have anything to fucking to gain from fighting me, but he wouldn't, right? He wouldn't. Oh, he's like, I don't need to fight you. You know, and that's the way he was through his career. I know a lot of guys that played against him. I know a lot of guys that fought him, and that's how he was. Like, you know, he wasn't a good guy. I don't want to talk too bad about the guy, but he's a fucking talker and a piece of shit. You have a job to do, come on and do it. You know, the fucking Fridge come on and did it. He's like, yeah, I'll fight you. He goes, fuck him. He goes, I'll fight you. And I said, all right, let's go. Fuck, you know. I hate that. You know, I don't care how old I am. Any fucking young guy wanted to fight any league, fucking rights. I'll throw the gloves off because that's your job.
So that's kind of your mentality, where it's like, if you got challenged, you got to go. That's like, there's no ifs,
fucking right.
Buts.
There's a time and place for it. Like, don't get me wrong, right? We all know that there's a proper time to do it, but there's also a proper time to do it. Like, you know, I talked to a lot of guys coming up that used to, you know, challenge on Probert, right? And they're like, hey, he's like, all right, kid, let's go. You know, he would do that for a lot of guys, right? You know, we all got into those leagues and those positions at one time. I remember being the fucking young guy in Peoria, then in the American League challenging every fucking tough guy. And they're like, all right, yeah. I remember fucking Mel Engelstad fucking, he was in Portland for the Pirates when I was up in Worcester. And I was like, come on, Mel, fucking give me a go. He's like, oh, fucking rights, kid, let's do it. You know, and he fucking rung my bell, dude. That guy fucking, he's fucking pretty tough.
That's what Todd Fedoruk was talking about when we had him on interviewing. He said Rob Ray, like he didn't have to, but you know, that was his first ever scrap. And you know, he was kind of towards the end, but nonetheless gave the younger guy the scrap because it was his job. So I definitely respect the guys who didn't pick their spots. And I don't really I wouldn't have a run in with Brashear or Bondi either, though. Those guys are tough son of a bitches.
Yeah. Brashear fucking, you know, I'm not saying that he's not a tough guy, because he's a big, tough guy. But fucking do it, you know. That's just shit like that really pisses me off. I've seen a few guys do that over the years, right? And it's like, come on, do your fucking job, you know. Don't be a chicken shit, you know. Don't be scared to lose a fight. I mean, because that's what it is, right? They're all, what if I fucking fight this guy and lose, right? Well, fucking, if you're on your game, you better be on your game. You won't lose. I mean, don't be a fucking bitch. That's one of the biggest things that irks me in all the game, is fucking pretenders and guys that pick their spots. You know, it fucking just drives me nuts. That fucking Garcillo, when I was fucking, I tried to fight him and fucking, who's the other guy that had in Philly? Neither wanted to fight. And I'm running around like an idiot, fucking crushing their team, and they still wouldn't come out and fight. It was fucking hilarious. We had fucking Eric Cairns just fucking laughing at him on the bench. He's like, you fucking pussies. You won't even fight him. You won't even stand up for your own team. It was great. I mean, it was awesome at the time.
Well, I think I also think you're wired a little bit different. I mean, you're even fighting family members on the ice. Nasty Marasti, who I didn't realize
related.
Wait, so there's this video.
We're not blood related, but we're, you know, through some marriages, you know, we're always in Meadow Lake, everybody's cousins. Right, we always joke about that. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though. But that's the thing. Johnny just has the mentality. Like, he likes to fight. He's like me. I like to fight. I like the job. I'm never going to be a guy that come on here on any fucking thing and say, "Oh, I didn't like my job." Because you know what? If you didn't like your job, go get a fucking different job. You know what? You can play in the NHL and make millions of dollars, and you're going to complain, "Oh, I didn't like to fight." Well, then go get another fucking job. Whose fault is it? You're going to come on fucking media and pout about it? Fuck you. That's what I say to those guys.
Woo! Hey, I actually watched that clip today. It was December 19th, 2008, and you're playing against the Syracuse Crunch, and the period was over, and you and Marasti end up going, like, as both teams are on the ice, going, like, crossing benches here to go to your locker rooms, and you got the Christmas jersey on. Everybody's supposed to be in the festive mood, and you guys end up teeing off on each other for at least 90 seconds, just throwing haymakers. What, like, were you guys, like, talking about this before games, knowing that
I mean, you know, if you watch it now, you're right. So, you know, you remember, you played there a lot. So, you know how, like, you have to skate off if it's a second period, so you're down in our end, right? And you have to skate to the other corner and as to skate off the ice, right? So it was somebody, whether it was their goalie or our guy, kind of hit the goalie, and then shit started stirring up, right? And we're all just trying to get off for the period. Everybody was, right? And then shit kind of started, and then there was a big tall guy that I just eked. I mean, he wasn't a real big tough guy. He was a bigger guy that they had there, and I was trying to get him to fight. But he wouldn't fight, and then fucking Johnny come in. He's like, "Oh fuck, let's just do it." And I was like, "All right, let's just do it, right? Because hey, just do it, and then everything can calm down, right?" And plus, obviously, we love to fucking fight, so I mean, yeah. And it just turned into fucking a long ass fight. I mean, I had sore forehead and I had sore knuckles when I was done with that fight.
Yeah, I was like,
la 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 la. Look away.
And somebody had a picture one time, and I wish I could get this picture from somewhere. It was somebody took a picture from up in the rafters, or they had a camera up there, and it was literally both teams in a big circle around center ice, and me and Johnny in the middle fighting. I was like, I seen it. I was like, man, I got to find a way to get that picture someday. I never did, but maybe someday somebody will have it and I'll come across it. But it was a pretty cool picture.
Well, you mentioned the stands, and I reached out to Brendan Siegel, who also played with you. And he said, I don't know if you were healthy scratched or maybe you were injured, but you were sitting in the crowd one time, and you end up getting hit by a puck that came out of play.
Yeah. I had to miss, like, the rest of that year. Dude, one of our guys just flipped it from the end, went over, just hit me in the head. It was crazy.
And you thought that somebody suckered you in the crowd, he said.
Fuck yeah. Oh, dude, I fucking turned. I thought somebody suckered me. I turned. I remember I threw my popcorn, and I turned, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I swear to God, somebody suckered me. And, oh, who was the guy on my team? Big, tall guy, Thompson. Big, tall guy, big on our team. He grabbed me. He goes, jabs, jabs. He grabbed me. He goes, no. He goes, it was the puck. And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. And then we were all laughing about it, you know. And then it was all fine. You know, docs checked me out. I had a big fucking black and blue mark on the side of my head. But then, you know, later that night, I kind of got a little goofy. And so, you know, I had like a bad concussion, pretty bad. So, you know, I sat out. And the best thing to do, especially with my job, like, you know, just sell the rest of your rest. And that's what I did, right? Because, you know, I wanted to come back 100% and not have to deal with it. So that's what I did.
Wow.
Yeah, but I want to go back to the one NHL game, which, by the way, it's good enough to get you on the hockeyreference.com. You get your own page there. All you need is one, which is good. Was that a situation? I'm guessing it was a call-up. Or was it out of camp? Was it a day where you remember every little detail, like everything kind of slowed down, or was it like a business as usual approach? What were the emotions of that day?
I remember, like, it's something I'll remember because, fuck, we were in the American Hockey League, obviously. I was in Worcester, and we had a couple games before. So, shit you not, I think it was, so there was two games before that game I had in Worcester. me and Gillies fought twice. He was in, I think, Lowell at the time. So we had two big fights and two really good fights. Like, you know, me and Gil's, we'll fight to the fucking death. As much as we're brothers, I want to knock his fucking teeth out. He does the same for me, right? And then the next game is when Portland came to town. And that's when I fought Mel Engelstad, fought another guy on their team. And then I fought Mel Engelstad, too. And he got the better of me that fight, too. I'll never forget fighting him because we were fighting and I got a couple two good shots in and I was like, I thought I was really good, and he just come around, I don't even know if it was left or right, but he fucking dropped me to my knee and I was just like, what the fuck just happened, you know? So I had a fucking black eye, I had a lot of marks on my face. And so there's a night or two later, I was going out to meet Terry Virtue, Eric Bermanis, I think we're going out to a movie, and we're watching the movie and we're just sitting down. And I was like, oh, fuck, my phone's ringing. It was Grassi, it was Don Granato. I was like, George, fucking coaches call me. He's like, well, fucking go take it. So I went out in the hall of the movie, and fuck, he goes, yeah, you know, how are your hands? How's your face doing? I was like, and I'm thinking right away, because we were playing the Phantoms. Philly was coming in like the next night. He's probably seen how I'm doing, because they had a shitload of tough guys too. I'm like, oh, Grassi, I'm good. You know, knuckles are good. Face is good. He's like, oh, okay, then. He goes, well, Lim will be there in the morning to pick you up. He's like, you're going up to St. Louis. And I was just like, what the fuck? I was like, you know, I was like, holy shit. You know, it was one of those things. Pretty surprising.
Do you remember the most amount of fights you had in one season pro?
Oh, shit. You know, I truly don't.
You think you ever had 40? I mean, at least you had 30 for sure a couple times.
Probably upwards towards the 30-ish, yeah. Right? I mean, that's probably where it was, probably around there. I don't think I've ever had more than that.
Any memorable ones where you actually got the wrong side of it? I mean, is there one where you're like, fuck, I got my ass kicked there? I mean, there must've been plenty that it was the opposite.
Out of all my fights, which I've fared pretty well over the years, I'll remember the one Mel Engelstad, he got me in that fight, back in, when I was in Worcester. What's his name? He was playing in Wilkes-Barre before you were there, Biz.
Vandenbush?
Not Vandenbush. No. It was not Downey, not Aaron Downey.
Cosey? David Cosey? He's a
no,
big
no,
bastard.
No, not Cosey.
Brookbank?
Not Brookbank. Me and Brookbank had a couple good fights, though, but I always got the better of him. I forget, but it wasn't a big, but I was watching his fights before because I always study the fights. And he would come into the fights throwing the right all the time. I think it was Bull Reese.
Oh, yeah.
Bull Reese, that's who it was. Yep. Yep. And he would throw the right. I was watching his fights before. And so when guys are squaring off, I always study fights. And he would fucking come in and he would kind of fake the grab and he would throw that fucking straight right. And so I was like, okay, I'm watching for this, right? And instead he fucking throws out this fucking left, like right on the chin. And so I went down, you know, I kind of tried to get back up, but he definitely got me there. But the most of all was Steve McIntyre. He fucking dropped me like a bag of bolts,
dude. Oh, my God.
He fucking dropped me like hard.
It was like fighting a bear.
That fucking guy is the toughest guy by far that I've ever fought.
He wants me dead, too. The worst person in the world to want you dead, let me tell you.
He'd be talking the way you're talking. he'd be talking the way that you're talking about the guys who wouldn't fight you on the podcast if we brought him on about Witt. But we constantly talk to guys about these Russian stories, and you ended up getting to spend 2 years over there. We asked Josh Hennessy, and he basically said, I don't think I could tell you one story that you'd be allowed to tell on the podcast from Yabo's experience over there. There's that YouTube video that went viral with you and Morasti getting the scrap against some like Russian mobsters. Like, what do you recall from your entire time there? And are there some stories that you can share from your experience?
Well, first off, my time there was amazing. The first year, especially just for both years. So the first year I was there was great. You know, there was me, Morasti, Kit Brennan were there, Tarnaski. Those kind of are American guys there. So definitely guys that could chuck it. And it was great. I mean, you know, getting to Russia, you know, Chekhov was a great city. You know, I'm literally still like family, you know, to the people that ran the team then, still talk to them all the time. But you want to talk about the whole street fight, right? Well, what happened was, so when they do exhibition, they'll send like four teams to like a city, right? And then you'll play each team once, right? And then that's kind of the way they do exhibition there, right? So we were there, and fucking after the game, you know, it was Panarin, you know, fuck, who's obviously a star now in the NHL. He was awesome with us too. He was young, but he goes, you guys want to come to like this place, you know, for like, you know, I didn't know a lot of Russian then. Like, I know Russian now pretty good, but not then. And he's like, you guys want to come to, it's like a restaurant and then, you know, kind of like a club. And we're like, yeah, sure. You know, we'd love to. Right. So we go there. The parent goes, he goes, oh, it's rented out. We have to wait for a while. So what happened was there was a wedding party that was there and they had rented the whole place out. He goes, we got to wait for like half an hour. So we're like, all right. So we're literally standing outside along the wall and people are funneling out. They're, you know, obviously they're coming out and I don't know what happened, but people started like yelling at us, like, and we don't even know Russian. And I'm like, hey, I think they're fucking yelling at us. So then we kind of got up. We're like, hey, you know, and believe me, I was like, you know, we don't need to fight. Like, there's no problem here, right? And I'm thinking there's a fucking shit ton of people outside. I'm thinking, here we go. I just got here for a couple of weeks and then get shot. You know, that's what's going through my mind. And then fucking, you know, shit kind of takes off. And then so we just start fucking dropping people like left and right. And I'll never forget, we're walking, Rasty's on my right, and I'm fucking, so I'm trying to keep like my back to the wall, everybody in front of me, I'm like, hey, let's just get out of here. These bunch of guys were laid out. And as I'm backing up, I seen through my peripheral vision on my right, this fucking guy tried to come between the cars and sucker Morasti, and he fucking full out sucker Morasti. And fucking didn't even do anything to him. Well, fucking Rasty can take a punch. And so he walked right in front of me, and I just like unloaded like one shot on him and just fucking stretched this guy out too. And then we just kept fucking backing away. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's on
and
YouTube.
So what was funny is, you know, we go to fucking, you know, in the morning, I called Nazi, our coach, you know, Nazi, look, the shit went down. He goes, oh, yeah, I heard Abby and stuff. He's like, you know, it's okay. He goes, so then literally nothing happened for like probably like fucking 2 or 3 weeks, nothing in the fucking media. And we were talking, we're like, how does fucking this go down and nobody fucking gets this in the media, right? And there's somebody, if you watch on YouTube, he's like, Yablonski, Morasti, MMA, you know, he was yelling all this shit, and I didn't know what he's saying. Now I know. He was basically saying, he goes, that's Yablonski, Morasti. He's like, don't fight him. He's like, Yablonski's like an MMA fighter. He was like telling these people, like, don't fight him.
Wrong door.
yeah, right. And so, but anyways, the funny thing is, I come into the one morning, I'm coming in, and Nazi's like, yeah, and he was laughing at me, our coach. Nazi's, you know, big Nazarov, right? He goes, oh, you got to go look at the TV. Go look at the TV. And I was like, what? I was like, you know, what's going on? So I look in the TV. We're on every fucking news station, you know, me and Rasty, fucking, and it said we're fucking, this is the worst part. This is Russian for you. Said that we got invited to a wedding and started a brawl with everybody. And this is on, like, this was on for a week on the news. Like, I'm not kidding you. For a whole week, it was on, like, every news fucking station. It was like, we didn't go to this fucking wedding. We're like, we're going to this place. Panarin took us to this fucking place for dinner. Like, it was crazy. But, you know, it is what it is.
What were some other, insane cultural experiences from over there? Because, I mean, we've had guys on, and they just said, like, you guys were treated like royalty in some cases.
Yeah, we were. So, I think... I think people that understand sports in general in Russia is very held highly in regards, right? Any other sports. Although, you know, very old school. Russia's still very old school. Like, and that's what I do like about it. Like, Chekhov, a very old school city. The way Nikolai ran, you know, and ran the team, very old school. So I really like that. You know, once you get past the language, you know, the people are great. It's, you know, the food's a little different, but nothing that, you know, everything just falls into place, right? You just find your basics. But I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed my time in Russia, and I planned on going back. The second year, we got a sponsor that actually, when me and Gillies got to play there together, so we got a sponsor that took over, and him and the owner kind of ran it, you know, sharely, right? So the sponsor wanted to pick the coach, so they got rid of Nazarov, which was too bad. They got this fucking other coach, didn't speak English, did not like fucking North Americans one bit. So, you know, I tried to fight him in practice one time. But I fucking lost my shit. Lost my shit. And I didn't like the fucking guy. I fucking freaked out at him. We had meetings, team meetings, and I was fucking, we were yelling at each other in the team meetings. I just fucking had no respect for that piece of shit. And either in some of the guys. But anyways, we're on the ice, and practice is going fucking great. You know what, Disney, you have those practices. Things are just popping. Everybody's fucking popping. Guys were laughing, like, a little bit, like, in a good mood, right?
Yeah.
And so he puts his fucking, calls everybody to center ice. So we're standing there. He was talking to guys, and I was like, kind of trying to figure out what he's saying. And I'm like, so he's not happy about something. I knew that. And he looks at me, and he goes, why are you laughing? Why are you laughing? Why are you smiling? I said, oh, coach, I'm thinking, coach, practice is great. You know, high pace. You know, I'm still trying to be courteous, right? Like, high pace. I said, fuck, it was good practice. And he goes, oh, fuck. He goes, you go home and tell your wife to fuck. And I was like, what?
Oh,
and I fucking tossed my fucking gloves. My stick almost hit the fucking assistant coach with it. And I fucking went at him. And fucking Danny Markov, who's a fucking beauty, he fucking grabbed me, and a couple of the other guys are like, Debbie, don't, you'll fucking kill him. And I chased him off the ice in practice. He left ice. And then that other fucking piece of shit fucking assistant coach they had, he was standing there with his two hands on his glove behind his face with just his eyes up. And I was in his fucking face, like, spitting in his eyes. And I'm like, you fucking piece of shit. I was like, I should kick your fucking ass too. He just fucking stood there and didn't move like he was a fucking statue. It was fucking great. I mean, and the guy's like, well, that's kind of a saying. Yeah, but it's different in Russia. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. I was like, I was going to kill him. I was going to bash his fucking head against the ice. Cause I was at a point where, like, you know, the respect for hockey, the respect for the guys. And he was like, I don't know what his problem was, because practice was fucking phenomenal. Right. And I had a lot of guys in the team stick up for me too. We had great guys in the team that, you know, some shit went down and they're like, fuck that. They're like, the coach was being an asshole. You know, I might have crossed the line a little bit, but it is what it is. And that's just who I am.
So Danny Markov was there. Was he still ripping darts between periods when you were playing with him?
Oh, fucking 100%. That guy was fucking before the game, during the game. And that fucking guy, you know, and you wonder, like, that guy could play fucking 2 minutes straight. And I'll give him credit. That guy fucking plays hard hockey. He's not a fucking, I'm going to come out here and float around. He plays his fucking nuts off. He fucking right. I've got to play with him in Nashville. So when I was in Nashville for the summer training there, that's when Danny was there. And that's the same time Radulov got there in the summer. And so I remember fucking sitting in the room, Trotsky comes in, Yabs. I was like, what's up, Trots? He's like, this is your buddy. He goes, he's going to sit with you this summer and here. I was like, all right. And it was Radulov, right? And he didn't fucking speak a lick of English. He's got the worst fucking ADD you could ever imagine. But, I mean, on the ice, you know, he's 20 years old, but he's fucking amazing. I'm trying to, like, take care of this guy. Not, like, take care of him, but, like, you know, he's like, just, you know, take care of him. Make sure he's okay. I was like, oh, no problem, Trots, right? Because we were there just training in the summer, right? What a great time. I mean, you can't
R.A.
That.
R.A. calls him the Warthog.
The Warthog.
well, Biz was calling him a farm animal forever, and then someone said, I think Grinnelli said boar, and then I think Warthog just fits perfect. But are you rooting for him now that Dallas is in the final?
Yeah, no, I am. I definitely am. You know, he's one. I always root for guys. I got to root for teams. I root for guys I know or play with. So he's one of the only guys out there that I really played with. So, you know, I'd like to see him win a cup. And, you know, I'll say one thing. He was young and a little bit wild maybe at one time. But he's come a long way, I think, on his maturity level and what he's done with himself. And we got some other mutual friends, you know, Ilya Zubov, another good buddy that was in Binghamton with us, who they're good friends. So we kind of got a good group of guys and over there. And I'd like to see him win if possible.
I think Danny Markov was the legend who was driving the wrong way on a one-way, like on a bridge in Philly at one point. I think that guy was an animal.
I wouldn't doubt it. He was an animal. Like, off the ice, he was an animal. You know, he's one of a kind, man.
some of these Russian guys, it's like the rules don't apply to them over there. Like, just their drinking culture is just crazy.
Yeah, definitely. So I know a guy, I'm not even going to say his name. So I got to Russia, and he was playing on a Moscow team, and I was like, hey, what's up? He goes, I say, hey, come on, let's meet up and go. He goes, oh, I can't. And he's like, I'm in kind of trouble right now. I was like, what happened? And well, he bought a fucking Bentley and got hammered and drove it through a fucking store one night. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll keep you inside for a while.
They bag skated him for one practice.
Like,
yeah, paid it off. Because I was waiting for this to come on the media, but, you know, obviously he paid it off and kept it under wraps, which was good. So, yeah.
We were just talking about Kostitsyn. Sergei Kostitsyn just got busted in Minsk for doing the same thing. It's just like they don't follow the rules there.
Yep. No, I know. And hey, we've all had our fuck ups and done stupid shit as well, right? The North Americans, don't get me wrong. But yeah, they it seems that they're a bigger percentage of that sometimes.
Yeah. Did you have any experiences with the infamous Russian gas while you were over there?
No. I've heard about, people talk about it, and I've never ever seen it and never even really heard about it when I was there.
Well, they saw you. They took one look. They're like, we can't give this guy the gas. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you know, I heard some guys talking about it. They said they use it. It's like a recovery thing, if I'm correct. Is that what you guys...
I think it was straight meth from what we've heard.
I don't know. It's somebody's telling me, no, like, we use it for, like, I think it was after the games, if I'm correct. And they would use it for, like, a recovery. It puts you into a better recovery. And that's really all I know about it. But I never got to see it. We never had it in Chekhov. I mean, if they did, I mean, fuck, I'd have been, maybe I'll give it a rip to see what it's all about. I mean, you know, but.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, well, I don't got much else, man. This is, I'll say one thing. You definitely set the record for F-bombs on the Spit and Chicklets podcast during the
interview. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure I did.
That's all right. So what about since hockey ended, retirement and stuff? How's that gone? What are you doing? Where are you these days?
You know, it's good. So I live in Dallas, Texas right now. I've been here for about 4 years. So I do a lot of international work right now. I do some great banking. I got some guys to work with, you know, it's surprising. It's probably surprised a lot of people. We do a lot of banking investments. So I got a special aid for, I'm not going to say special. I got some good guys that I've worked alongside with the government, and I've done a lot of good projects around the world, and I met some good bankers and stuff. And we do some PPE stuff, like some special-rated, like tier one traders and stuff. So now I kind of, you know, I talk to some groups, different groups, and it's kind of nice. You know, I get to make a little bit off of, but I get to make a lot of people a lot of money when they got, you know, $1 million or $2 million, and then they invest it with our group, and the tier one traders put it to work, and it's pretty amazing what they can do, like, in 6 months' time. It's stuff that I would have never known about, this type of bank, until you get to a very high level. And I was very blessed to be able to be a part of it. And it's something, you know, I'm just glad to be able to do it every day.
Yeah, but you did three separate stints for the Idaho Steelheads. Great name, by the way, located in Boise, Idaho. I think Idaho's maybe one state or province we've never really even mentioned on the show before. What's the most surprising thing about Idaho that people aren't aware of?
Humping Hannah's. You know,
yeah, oh yeah, there. Humping Hannah's just a classic place. Rocky is like the shit. She's still there, crushing it on stage. But, you know, Boise is a great place. It's Boise is a city, and it's literally a city. And even since I've left there, I went back for an alumni game a couple of years ago. the place is growing like a madhouse. Like, it feels like it's growing as much as here in Dallas. And it's not just potatoes and cornfields out there. It's definitely, it's the outdoors is just amazing. And the cities are, the Boise, the city itself is just fabulous too. It's almost like a small Denver.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
And going back to the scraps one more time, was there anybody who scared you?
No, not really. I've never really feared anybody. I've always been on my toes for people. I've never underestimated people. You know, I learned that in boxing. I was taught that very young. You don't underestimate anybody. I mean, because big or small, I mean, guys that can fight and throw a punch, you know, it takes one shot to knock you on your fucking ass. And so I really, you know, I never had a guy coming in, like even Biz when we fought, like I probably watched every fight you had 2 years before, every game that we played you guys. So I knew exactly like how you fought, what you did, and ways that I could counter that stuff. I did that to every person because I never wanted to, you know, I wanted to always be as knowledgeable as I can about who's coming in. I was like, oh, who they got to fight, right? And just go out and fight. So I think that's the one reason I did so well is because, you know, I made sure I was always on top of my game.
Maybe I should have been watching guys fighting tapes instead of chasing pussy. Maybe I would have won a couple.
Oh, don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. You did your job very fucking well. And I know the organization fucking loved the way you played the game very well too, Biz. You could play the game at a high level, which was good. And you fucking brought the knuckles every time you had to. So I give you a lot of respect for that.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Tummy sticks.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on here, dude. It was great. Actually finally chatting with you. I heard a lot about you. We appreciate it.
Oh, definitely, guys. Really appreciate it anytime.
Love it. Thanks, Yabo.
Thanks, Yabo. Take care, brother.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Big thanks to Jeremy for joining us. Hope you guys enjoyed it. It was certainly fun talking to him. Definitely a character. Probably have him back sometime at some point, no doubt.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
All right, gang, and next up, we have Dylan Playfair. This one is a Biz solo adventure, and those are always fun, so now we're going to send it over to those guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, a long time since I've done a one-on-one interview. I met this kid when his father was coaching me. A lot of you probably know who he is because of an infamous video that went viral everywhere, and we're going to get into that. And he, after that, after his terrible hockey career, maybe even worse than mine, he has found himself in the acting world. He's going to be the next Gordon Bombay. Is that right?
Okay, hey, bud. Absolutely.
And the new Mighty Ducks. And also Letterkenny. It started as Letterkenny Problems, but they've changed it to Letterkenny. A very successful show in Canada. It's kind of like it's got a cult following and probably deemed as the modern day Trailer Park Boys, at least for Canada standards. So welcome to the Spit and Chicklets podcast, Dylan Playfair.
Good to be here, bud.
That was a long-winded intro, but that's how I have to do them because I can't do them like RA does them.
No, yeah, I liked it. You took the pressure off me with the pod pass. I was sweating buckets here before we even got on here. So I'm thinking, pressure's off, boys. I'm feeling good. Now let's roll with it.
Yeah, I go dash one before you do. Okay, so let's talk about your old man quick. Jimmy Playfair, had him as an assistant coach in Phoenix. And obviously when we signed him, that video of him in Abbotsford, and I guess I'll let you describe it.
Yeah, the infamous stick breaking video that actually ended up getting me my first agent. So, he calls me up. I was trying out for the Dawson Creek Rage, I believe, which was a defunct team in the North American Hockey League. And he goes, "Hey, turn on TSN. I got to show you something." So I click on the TV and there's Jimmy fucking snapping four twigs on the bench, losing his mind, going Hulk Hogan on the boys. And he obviously didn't agree with the call and got vocal about it and broke some twigs and voiced his concerns. And it ended up making like the Sportsnet, you know, top 10 sport coach freakouts or whatever. And at the same time, when I was transitioning into acting, I went and took a meeting with Carrie Wheeler, who's now my agent. And about an hour and a half into the meeting, she's like, listen, I don't need a pretty boy hockey player who thinks he can act. Like, I'm going to be hard on you. I'm going to be strict with you. I'm going to have to tell you to do things you're not going to want to do. I'm like, okay, hold on, slow your rope. Just stop for 1 second. I got to show you something real quick here. And I pull up Jimmy's video of breaking twigs. I go, so that's the man who raised me. So whatever you think you can throw my way, I can guarantee I'll be fine.
So he was a tough old man. Was he very stern with you guys growing up?
Yeah, you know, he just expected us to work as hard as he did, because I think he recognized how hard it is to make the NHL. As you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who dream about it, and it's a pretty select few group of people who get there. And I think he just wanted to make sure that we put in everything that we could control into getting to wherever we got to. And he was a ton of fun. Like, don't get me wrong. My dad's one of my best friends in the world, but he's a no nonsense guy. You know, he expects you to perform, and he expects you to put in the work. And that was the way I was brought up. So it was pretty strict, but that was fun.
You kind of failed to mention the fact that, well, you said he went Hulk Hogan. I mean, he exposed himself to that crowd. I don't know if you could get away with that nowadays.
Yeah, no, he told me the only reason he stopped breaking sticks is because he was losing oxygen because his tie got so tight. If you watch the video, he cinches it right up. He started blacking out halfway through.
Yeah, that had a negative effect. He's like losing a fight with himself at that point. But it was classic. And like you said, it's in the top 10 every time they roll him out on like TSN or Sportsnet of the biggest snap shows by head coaches. But Your playing career, you played up until junior A. I was kind of chirping you a little bit about your playing ability. What were your stats like in junior?
Oh man, if you've looked them up, I mean, 0 goals, 1 assist, 140 some odd PIMs. I was watching your highlight reels trying to fucking be the biz nasty of the BCHL. I was calibrated incorrectly, I guess you could say. But no, man, I was hard nosed. I would have dreams about standing in front of an open net and just firing pucks and them stopping on the goal line. Like, there was a fucking piece of plexiglass there, dude. It got into my psyche. I could not.
That's probably
score.
How weak your shot was, though. It probably actually couldn't have gotten there. Right? No tucks. Oof. That's
it was a tough one, man. It was a tough year. So it's funny now people think that I was like a pretty skilled player because of, you know, the stock that I'm bred of. But I'm like, no, you guys, you don't get it. My transition into film was pretty obvious for me. I kind of knew it was what was ahead of me for my hockey career. So I made the switch pretty easy.
Okay. So let's back it up. When you were in the early ages and even in the high school, were you taking acting classes? Were you always that type of guy? Or because you were in the hockey world, like you know, there's a bit of like, oh, you're acting kind of thing. Like, there's a stigma towards it. Obviously it's not as much like that as now as it used to be, but you know, were you doing that at a young age?
Yeah. I mean, I was always like the dressing room guy who kind of relieved tension. And I had the boys laughing at all the team parties. Like, it was kind of the role that I assumed for myself. I certainly wasn't, you know, contributing on the ice. So I had to figure out a way to be a viable member of a team. So I always had fun, you know, on the bus and in the dressing room. And I really did enjoy doing drama and theater and whatnot. But like you said, it's kind of one or the other in high school. So I really just focused on hockey, but I always kind of knew that it was going to be something that I did after the game. And I was actually watching Friday Night Lights and telling my coach about it, Luke Pierce in Merritt. And he goes, yeah, that Taylor Kitsch kid, he used to play in this league. Hey, he played for Langley. And Kitsch is Tim Riggins, Big Riggs. I don't know if you watch Friday Night Lights, but
that's boy band pussy, is it not?
Oh, that's buddy, that's wet floors.
I'm getting that vibe. I'm getting that Bieber vibe when you said that, when it rolled off your tongue.
Oh, buddy, that's that's slippery when wet, and it's always wet. So, no, I kind of thought, well, shit, if he can do it, I mean, that's pretty close to home. I'll look up his sort of journey, and I basically mapped out what he had done and kind of followed his footsteps, because I knew it was something that I could come into and have success with just based on my naivety and my arrogance. So I figured, fuck, if he can do it, I'll do it too. And I moved out to Vancouver and ran with it.
I mean, what kind of things were you doing in the locker room where you were getting the boys all fired up? Like give us an, I mean, I was coming in with the mangina sometimes. It was definitely a lot more old school, but what was like the modern day version of being the class clown, so to speak?
Yeah, no, not too different from your version. I mean, if you watch Letterkenny, we got a lot of the same shit that, I mean, that's the beauty of the show, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but
oh yeah,
all the boys on that show played hockey, had, you could say, failed careers as far as we got, we had fun with it, but we never made the show. So a lot of that stuff that you see in the show comes from our experiences. And the game Dinkerball was a game that that I myself was a champion of, and it's a lot like mangina, but you jam up your junk and the boys have to choose or guess whether it's a dink or a ball in your hand. I mean, that was one. Fuck, but I was pretty good at accents and voices. I could
that one's called Dinkerball.
Yeah, Dinkerball. You turn around, you grab your junk, whether it's nut or part of your shaft or the tip, if you're really bold. And
it's like two birds in the bush, like at the dinner table, but it's the locker room version.
Exactly. Unreal. And you have to decide whether it's a dink or a ball. So
was that your, what was your big introduction into acting? Like, how did you originally get started? What was your first roles?
So my very first role was a music video for AJ Woodworth, which I think is still online somewhere. It's pretty cringy. So I came out to Vancouver. A kid on my team, his dad worked as a production assistant. So he was a guy, or not a production assistant, sorry, a location manager. He would go find the locations for the films and TV shows in Vancouver. So he got me a job working as a PA, just like emptying garbage cans and shit like that. And every person I talked to, I was like, hey, I have no idea how to get into this industry, none whatsoever. So if you guys know anyone who can help me out, you know, give him my name. And through that, I got into a beer league team where I ended up meeting Jared Kiso. And I kind of told him the same story that I told you guys. I'm like, this fucking Taylor Kitsch guy can do it. I can do it too. And he goes, okay, kid, I love the juice. Why don't you meet this agent that I used to work with? And that was Carrie Wheeler. And I told her that story that I just told you guys about my dad. And she goes, okay, well, if you're serious about it, you know, get yourself enrolled in some acting classes. Let's see some auditions. Let's see if you can do it. And yeah, I got lucky, man. I was like 2 months in and I booked my first feature movie, which is called Grave Encounters. And it was kind of off to the races from there.
Okay, you just mentioned one of the guys, one of the creators, Jared Kiso. Tierney, what's the guy? I forget his first name.
Jacob Tierney.
Jared Tierney is one of the writers as well. So were those the original guys who created the show?
So it was originally Kiso and a pal from Listowel had a show, or not a show, a Twitter feed called Listy Problems. So they would just list funny shit from their hometown. They're from a small town, Ontario, and you know, the original seed of the idea came from that. And then him and Nate Dales, Jared and Nate Dales, started shooting these Letterkenny videos. And right around the same time, so Andrew Herr and I, who play the hockey players on Letterkenny, we had become roommates. So we were pals because he went to school at UBC. And I'm a degenerate dropout. I never went to college. I don't even know if I actually technically graduated high school. Because I switched from Alberta.
Join the club. I took grade 9 geography to get my fucking diploma.
Yeah, buddy.
I was like Billy Madison in there.
Fuck that, buddy. Me and Hersey found out that we both got 51% on our grade 10 math and just fucking rode off into the sunset. So anyhow, he's going to UBC and I'm going to acting school. And we're both auditioning around Vancouver and we booked this movie, Mr. Hockey, which is the Gordie Howe story. So I played Marty Howe. He played Mark Howe, and we're the children of Gordie. So we go and shoot this movie in Winnipeg and Jared sees it. And it was really fucking cool, man. He and Jamie LaPointe set up this viewing party for us because it was a TV movie, right? It was on CBC. So there's not really a premiere or anything like that, but he recognized how big of a deal it was for us. So he lays out this red carpet and our whole beer league team's there. And we have like the whole, like the CBC sweat, or the CBC, you know, sweat
the
towels.
Towel?
Yeah, oh, the towel. And he's doing, you know, iPhone interviews in the hallway there while we're watching Mr. Hockey, the Gordie Howe story. And we just had a real fun time with that, got banged up, watched the premiere. And then the next day, Jamie, who plays the ginger in the show, goes, you should bring the hockey players out for a Letterkenny skit. So we link up on the Sunday and do a read of this like 2-page skit that he'd written just sort of off the cuff, drive out to Ladner and shoot this Letterkenny skit with the hockey players in it. It's like a, you know, 2-minute YouTube video. And about a month and a half later, Jared calls us both and says, hey, there's like over 1 million hits on this video. I think this is a go for a series, boys. Like, this looks really good. So he shops it out to Bell, and Bell links him up with New Metric Media and Crave TV. And we're just hoping for like maybe a chance to shoot a pilot. You know, we're not really thinking much of it, but he calls us for dinner one night and, he goes, well, boys, we didn't get the pilot, but we got 6 episodes.
Fuck,
we're flying
off
out to Sudbury.
No.
We're flying out to Sudbury next week, and you guys are the hockey players. And I didn't know this at the time, but he went to bat for us. Like, we'd only done the one movie, really, and Bell wanted to audition like well-known actors to play the hockey players. And Jared goes, if I'm doing it, I'm doing it with the squad that I started with. I'm bringing the boys with
loyal.
Me. So. Yeah, loyal
like
to
like a dog,
like an absolute fucking beauty, buddy, like a legend. So yeah, we buzz out to Sudbury and shoot season one, and fuck, man, we had so much fun, and sort of the rest is history. You know, it really caught fire.
Remembering lines, like, is that, or are you guys a little bit more ad lib, very similar to Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I mean, that was honestly probably the biggest sort of like pressure that Hersey and I put on ourselves, because knowing that element of it, the fact that he really went to bat for us, like when we got out there, so the whole, like every script you see is almost written, like 99% of what you see or hear is written in the script. There's a little tiny bit of ad-libbing that we end up doing, but it's usually at the end of a scene, and it's usually like after all the stuff has been filmed, because in a show that quick pace, right? Like if you miss a line or you ad lib a line, you can throw the whole scene off, right? Because there's so many words, there's so many sentences coming in so fast from so many different characters that there's not much time to ad lib. So that first season, like I'm not exaggerating when I say 8 hours a night, Andrew and I would run those scenes. Like we'd work and work and work, because our whole thing was like, we got this one chance, you know, if we do good by Jared and Bell, then maybe we'll get a chance to do more of it. So I don't think there's anything in my life I've ever, you know, prepared more for. And then when you've got all that stuff locked in and memorized, then you can go into it and sort of have fun with it. But it's like, if you're a little bit unsure, then you're thinking about it, then you're thinking about what you're saying. So yeah, man, that's, I think, where we earned our paychecks, was just doing the work before we got on set, you know, to memorize.
And it goes back to the hockey thing. And I tell people, I'm always thankful for like growing up in that environment, because you're held accountable for even from a young age. Right. And
yeah.
Like you, and then you talked about the hard work that your old man instilled in you as well. And you're thinking in this situation, it's very similar to a hockey team, because like this guy went to bat for you, similar like to maybe your coach picking for the team.
Yeah.
And you put in that extra work just to ensure that you were going to provide. And dude, you've obviously worked your balls off to be where you are. So when you do this first season of Letterkenny, and I'd hope you'd be able to maybe explain more of what it's actually about, and maybe the different characters in the show that are very important. And did you guys expect for it to blow up as much of it as it did?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, it's a huge part of the success, I think, comes from where everyone was before the show started. You know, we, for the most part, like of the top cast, I think 7 of us all played at least junior hockey. So we all sort of had that makeup in us, you know? And then as far as the characters are concerned, again, we're all from small towns. Like I'm from Fort St. James, BC, bumfuck nowhere, north of Prince George. Hersey's from Kingston, Ontario. Kiso's from Listowel. Jamie's from, he's from the island. He's from a little town out there. And basically the tribes in the show are people that we all knew growing up, you know, like from those small towns. You got the Hicks, the Skids, the hockey players, the natives, the hardcore Christians, or the Mennonites. And I mean, so much of that just comes from reality. And I think that's a huge reason why the show resonates with people is because it feels like everyone kind of knows someone from Letterkenny, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah. I, for at least from what I hear of it. And I mean, so I was also digging for a little bit of information here. So as the show got more and more popular, it won an award. Uh-huh. And you guys ended up going to the award show. I'm not sure exactly which award show it was, but you guys ended up getting to meet Dave Chappelle backstage.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, Dave Chappelle. He was, man, it's still so surreal. Like, we buzz backstage, and there's Dave Chappelle, and he walks up to Michelle, who plays Katie, and he goes, "You guys, a show. You know, I can't do a Dave Chappelle exit. It's really funny. Good job." You know, like, it's all he said. He goes, "It's really funny." And I'm like, "Fuck, boys. Like, we're good. We're done. Like, I can die happy. Dave Chappelle just gave us a nod of approval." And then a couple years later, we got the Brad Pitt nod of approval. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but he was on the he was at the Oscars.
Come on.
I swear to God, man, he was at the Oscars, and a Canadian talk show host walks up to him and goes, "Hey, can I get a quick question for Canada?" He goes, "For Canada? Yeah, anything, you bet." He walks up, he goes, "You know, how do you feel about how do you feel about your movie being nominated for so many awards?" He goes, "I feel a lot better about the show Letterkenny," and then buzzes off. I was just like, buddy, unbelievable. And now I'm name dropping hard, so I'll just own it. But Ed Norton just fired us a thumbs up tweet on Twitter there, saying that Letterkenny is one of the best shows he's seen. So that was pretty cool. And that came out of Steve Brill, who's the creator of the Mighty Ducks. Like, he actually was talking to one of the other producers on Mighty Ducks. And when she had mentioned that she knew me, I guess he got all stoked and was like, "Well, let's reach out to Dylan for Mighty Ducks." So, I mean, we've got some pretty, we've got fans in high places, I guess you could say. It's wild.
Yeah. Let's get into the Mighty Ducks stuff. Mikey was teeing me up about it beforehand. So you're the next Gordon Bombay.
You bet. Coming in the clutch, flying V.
DUI started off or what?
Started off driving home a couple too many wildly pops. And yeah, no, it's funny, man. Actually, it's a really cool setup they got for it. So the Ducks have become like a 60 grand a year prep school and academy. So they're just a bunch of
cake eaters.
Yeah, cake eaters. Exactly. And I've come in as the young stud coach on his way to the show, taking this development team all the way to the top. And I'm coaching against Bombay's squad of ragtag boys. So it's so cool, man. Like, the other day I was standing on the bench and we were filming, and I look over and there's a scene where I gotta shoot a look to Bombay, and Bombay looks back to me like, "We gotta fuck you going on." And I just, dude, the hair stood
you
up
rip
on the
your
back.
Shirt off like your old man.
You're I grab it.
"You fucker, I'm gonna fucking kill you."
Yeah.
They're like, "Whoa, this so is tight. Disney. This is Disney."
He's ripped his mic off. We can't hear anything he's saying. He's fucking bleeding out. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's cool, man. It's like, obviously my brothers and I, like, we grew up on the series. So it's so surreal, man. It's really cool.
That's with Disney?
Yeah, Disney Plus.
Oh my god, you're gonna be like the next Hannah Montana.
Working on it, buddy. Well, hey, I mean, fuck, dude. I don't know if you know about it or not, but I did two musicals for Disney. I did The Descendants 2 and 3. I played the son of Gaston. I had to sing and dance. And
Can you sing for us? Like, what was a line that you had to sing in the play or whatever?
You ever heard of gang vocals?
No.
Yeah, it's literally just like, you could sing gang vocals. Grinelli could sing gang vocals.
Oh, I'm a great singer.
Yeah, I bet you are. Yeah, we should get you on the next track. It's literally, what was I saying?
La, 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 la.
I think it was literally, I'm listed on iTunes as like one of the artists, but my line is, "Ooma, ooma." Okay, thanks. You good? Leave this fucking studio. We'll just loop that.
So you get a credit for that? And that's not singing, is it?
Tell me about it. I know. I'm still shocked every time I see my name.
Damn, I could do that. You've motivated me like the, what's his name? The guy from Friday Night Lights motivated you to act.
Yeah, Taylor
Kitsch. I could sing. Christ Jesus. What else do we got to talk about here?
Well, you were almost the coach.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, explain that whole backstory. I know that I got asked at 2 points. Well, that was the first I've heard of it. Then the other one was when I was going to come in as this, like, hockey player who was doing blow, and I got asked to do like a little pop-up scene in Letterkenny, and I asked the Coyotes, and it was my first year in media, and I'm like, yeah, like, yeah, they're asking me to do this show, and like, I'm going to be ripping rails, and they're like, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe if we have you not ripping rails, maybe that'd be cool, maybe.
And I'm like, but I've been training for this my whole life.
Boys, this is my moment. You don't get it. I'll bring authenticity to the role. No,
I'd be like Daniel Day-Lewis in that role. Just fucking get the plate ready.
Yeah, right. Full committed character actor. Yeah, man, it was funny. So like I said, like in the early stages, it was really just kind of Jared and his buddies. And that was really the whole sort of nucleus of the show. And that was right around the time, like you said, you just started working for the Yotes, but I mean, I've been following your Twitter for a long, long time. I always thought you're like my spirit animal of hockey players. I was like, fuck, if only I was a little bit, buddy, if I was a little bit less garbage, I would have been there. I'd fight anyone who asked me, which was almost to a fault. I got the wheels beat off me a couple of times, but you know, you don't ask how, you ask how many. And I, you know, go up against some pretty big boys. And every now and then I'd get a little guy who'd fight me and I'd tune him and keep my ego up. But anyway, I digress into the Tilly talk about you. So I was pitching you hard. I'm like, fuck, Biz would be the funniest hockey coach. Like, I think it would fit the vibe really well. And this was around the time they were filling out the cast. And I guess they got an audition from Mark Forward, who is obviously the hockey coach now. And he's hilarious. He's like one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my entire life. So I think it worked out really well. Obviously your career is in a very healthy place here with Spit and Chicklets and the Yotes and whatnot, but they circled back and tried to get you in as the blow addicted hockey player. But I think the Yotes put the kibosh on it.
I would have got canned after 1 week, 'cause I can't memorize lines. That's like the hardest thing to me. I can't even read ad reads on this podcast, let alone get through the memorization process of it. I'd have to have a teleprompter set up the entire time.
Right. get the bird in the bag, the chicken in the bag, the cue cards. Yeah.
Oh man, great segue to ask you about the Magic Mike. I was supposed to ask you about the next Magic Mike.
Yeah, what about the next Magic Mike?
Well, this was teed
people
up.
People say you're a great dancer.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I am a great dancer. I'll send you some links from Descendants 2 and 3. I got this move down called the Crocodile, which I think they actually named after me. It's a very seductive maneuver where you start standing and you go to a push-up position, but your hips stay above your head, and then you slide back up, and you move like a crocodile. It's very erotic, very, very sensible, very Magic Mike.
So are you putting your name in the hat for the next role for that movie?
Well, you were going to say, do I think it's do I know? And yes. Ooh. Yes, I know I could do. Yeah, man, I put my name in that for sure. That'd be awesome. Work with Channing Tatum.
Well, I guess, is there anything else you wanted to mention that I didn't bring up on your behalf?
What coaching do you got with Grinnell? Tavares. Didn't you do some coaching with Tavares there?
Oh my God. Oh my God. You heard this story, eh? Dude, this is so funny. Okay. So, long story short, or short story long, I guess, depends on how you look at it. We're out in Sudbury, and, I grew up with the Foligno's. They're really close with, My cousins out in Buffalo, Larry Playfair and Mike and Dennis and Jenna and Anna, they all live out there and they grew up with the Foligno's. So Foligno's have this charity hockey tournament in Sudbury where they invite out a bunch of NHL guys and raise a ton of money for the children's hospital out there. And he asked, Mike did, if the boys from Letterkenny would come out as celebrity coaches. Now, this was in between the time my dad was with the Yotes and the Oilers. So I completely unplugged from hockey. Like I unfollowed the Twitter feeds. Like I deleted the Score app off my phone. I just was not into hockey. I was a little bit disillusioned. I kind of get into it when Jimmy's coaching, and when he's not, I'm pretty well focused on my own stuff. So this is during the Tavares transition from New York to Toronto, which is like one of the biggest hockey controversies that have happened in a long time, completely over my head. So he's one of the other celebrity coaches because he heard his knee in training camp or whatever, or training. I don't know why he wasn't playing, but he wasn't. He was standing right next to me, and I'm sitting there, hands in my pocket, a little awkward trying to make conversation. So Jared sat next to me and I look over and I swear to God, I go, so John, when are you heading back to New York for training camp? He just looks forward, doesn't even look at me. Keith's looking forward. He goes, I'm going to Toronto for training camp.
Oh.
And the boys on the bench must have thought that I was playing like a three-level deep chirp game because they started fucking laughing. They're like, this kid just took a shot right over the bow. And Jared's laughing because he knows. He's like, this sounds like you're, you know, a high-level chirp master. And after the game, he's like, that was hilarious, man. Like, I can't believe you had the balls to say that. I'm like, Jared, the worst part is I wasn't even digging on him. What? I just completely missed the last 2 years of hockey conversations. So,
didn't you apologize around the spot or?
Dude, I didn't even let it sink in until, because the boys started laughing. I'm like, I must have said something funny. And so, I mean, if he's listened, sorry, John.
An absolute dagger.
Yeah, right? Well, exactly.
Well, so, now I'm sure someone will tell him now and he won't hate your guts that much. So that's the good news.
It was pretty funny, though. I think Jared still believes it to be one of the best trips of all time. But I don't know, man. It ate me up for a while. Pretty funny, though.
Buddy, congratulations on all your success. Season 9 is coming out of Letterkenny. You can find it where?
Letterkenny is on Hulu. Did another movie recently in New York. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it. Odd Man Rush. That's on Amazon and iTunes. And Mighty Ducks is coming out on Disney Plus. So you can catch me playing hockey better than I ever played before on TV.
That Odd Man Rush is with Killorn's buddy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Fucking right. Also, good luck on all your other endeavors. I know you're a big Disney star now. Just don't end up going crazy like some of these kids do. Don't let it go to your head.
Yeah, no, I got Jimmy to keep me on the straight and narrow. He's got many more sticks where those other ones came from.
There's one more thing I got to bring up. Somebody told me that you have this shitting the pants story where I've done it a few times. We've talked about Shitty Cindy. I'm pretty sure a lot of people on this podcast are down with the shit stories. I got to hear what happened to you in this situation.
Yeah, so I have my own unique experience with shitting of the pants, and it starts with sobriety, actually. So I am taking a month off drinking. I'm doing Sober October, and I buy a six-pack of kombucha to go to this party. I didn't know this at the time. I know it now. Kombucha, when drank in excess, serves as a laxative, like a really effective laxative. So I get a six-pack of kombucha. I go to my buddy's party. I drink it all. Night's young. I'm like, okay, this Sober October is overrated. Let's get into one. So, you know, we're about 12 hours into October, and I've already fallen off the wagon. End up getting into one. The next day, I'm meeting my buddies and we're going out to my pal's cabin on the island for the long weekend. And we get on the ferry. So I live in Vancouver. We're going to Vancouver Island and it's like a 2-hour ferry.
What a beautiful ride that is. We got to hop in there. It is gorgeous. Anyone who goes to Vancouver, I recommend if you're going over the island, take that ferry out of Tawasin, correct?
That's right. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. The bathrooms are, you know, the stalls are floor to ceiling, so you can't see who's in the stall. That's a tidbit you're going to want to have as the story progresses. So the boys go up to the top deck and they're going out to get a breath of fresh air, and I'm walking up the stairs and I have what completely disguises itself as a normal sized human fart. And let me tell you, Biz, when I released the floodgates on this one, it wasn't a little squeaker. It was, by the time it was done, I didn't even need to go to the bathroom anymore. I just needed to throw out what I was wearing because it was a complete evacuation of my, it was like,
could it have filled up like a 750 milliliter bottle?
100%.
Oh,
100%. And a consistency like a Frosty. Just horrendous.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm,
you couldn't stop it? Like it was like whoosh, gone out.
It was as long as it takes to fart like one good one, that was the amount of time it took to fill up the underwear that I was wearing.
Oh my goodness.
Like to the teeth. So I got my hands in my pocket so I can grab the edges of my boxers to keep this from going down into my shoes. Like that's how bad it is. Like this is, I'm not even embarrassed. I'm laughing because I'm like, this is a sneak attack. Like no one could have prepared themselves for this event.
SEAL Team 6 coming in.
SEAL Team 6. The choppers are landing on the ferry. This is like this is a full operation.
Yeah.
So I'm like, boys, you gotta wait for me here. Like I'll be back, but you gotta wait for me. I'm gonna need to air out after this. Like hang tight. So mind you, this is the early morning ferry. This is 7 a.m. This is starting your day. So I waddle downstairs and I go and I see the first bathroom I see is the family bathroom. It's like the handicap bathroom, whatever, you know. So I open the door and I walk in, and in this particular bathroom on this particular ferry, you walk in and there's like a floor to ceiling door on the one stall and a little sink. So you can't like see who's in the stall. I thought it was empty. And I walk in and I swear to God, dude, there are two guys in the stall, and I'm in there long enough to know what they're doing, and they're fornicating. They're making love at 7 a.m. in a bathroom stall on the ferry. Mind you, I've just fully shit myself. So I'm thinking I have two choices to make. Either I stay here and deal with this, then they come out and we all deal with it, or I bite the bullet. I go outside and wait until they're done, and then I go back in and clean. I swear to God.
My opinion on the spot would have been like, they can deal with this. They're fucking in a bathroom. This is all, whatever. It's all going to get weird. Let's enjoy the party. That's my thinking.
It's about to get weird. And in hindsight, maybe I should have went with this, but I thought, well, they were here first, you know, I'll let them finish up and I'll loop back once they're gone. Cause there's no one else on the ferry. Like I'll just go and hover over the seat because I'm not sitting in it. I'm literally hovering. So I'm sitting, I wait in the benches, and there's a lady two seats up from me, the only other person that I could see on the ferry. And she's in her late 70s maybe, and she's sleeping. And this is where it gets crazy because I smell shit, not my shit. I can smell my shit. I know my own smell, but there's a new one. And this poor woman wakes up from what must have been a nightmare and turns around and looks at me. And I know in that moment that she's just shit herself. Cause she just shit herself in her sleep. And she gets up and now I have another choice to make. Am I gonna lean over my seat and go, listen, lady, I know you don't know me and I don't know you. And this is crazy cause it's 8 a.m. You shit yourself, I shit myself also. But guess what? The same bathroom that you're about to walk into, cause I know that's where you're going, cause that's where I just fucking went. In that bathroom, there are two guys boning in the fucking stall. And it's going to shake you because it shook me. And I can't yell that at her. She's like, she's as shook as I was.
Well,
like,
and you're taking the gamble that she didn't actually shit herself. And maybe it was just a fart she was embarrassed about.
Right? So she gets up and she waddles. So now I'm pretty sure that it wasn't a fart.
Okay.
And she waddles into the same bathroom that I just waddled out of. And takes about the same amount of time to recognize what I recognized. Turns around, walks out. I look at her, she looks at me, we both have this understanding of like, this is shit, this is just shit everywhere. So she doesn't decide to wait, she's going to find another bathroom. So she waddles her way to the other side of the ship, and these two guys come out, and they're having a great time. They're fucking grinning ear to ear, they've had a phenomenal morning.
They had the Roman swipes on.
Yeah, the Roman swipes were in use that day. So I wheel in there. I fucking throw these shorts into the trash. They're gone forever. They're done. Lock the door. Occur to see that these guys had not paid the rest of the patrons on the boat. Clean myself up. Mind you, this is all about a 45-minute endeavor. So by the time I get back up there, this is a while.
I would have just sat in that urinal the rest of the trip.
I thought about how long it would take to swim back to Vancouver, but I was in the middle of the Georgia Strait. I had to commit to the boat. So by the time I get back up to the top of the ship, my buddies are like, where the hell have you been, dude? Like, it's been an hour. I just tell them, like, boys, when I say this, I mean it. You will not believe the shit that I've just been through.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. There's the punchline. I love
and
it.
There's the punchline, boys.
Nice dismount. Great dismount. Dylan, that's fucked up, dude. I only, like, did a little one. My paper route one might have been a little bit bigger. not bigger than yours, bigger than my one recently at the airport. But that is that's fucking gross. I would imagine we've lost half of our listeners by the time you got to the fact when it came out. But a great story, and thank you very much for joining us. And best of luck with Letterkenny and everything else you got going.
Buddy, my pleasure. Glad to share it with you boys. Cheers.
Thanks so much to Dylan for sitting down with Biz. That's some good stuff. And if you haven't seen it yet, Letterkenny is currently streaming on Hulu here in the States. If you want to have some laughs, by all means, check it out.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
All right, well, the world woke up to some shitty news Sunday morning as we all found out that Jeopardy host Alex Trebek succumbed to pancreatic cancer a year and a half after making his diagnosis public. Alex, of course, was a proud son of Canada that I think Americans sort of adopted via their TVs for the last 36 years. I remember being a 12-year-old kid and Jeopardy returned to the airwaves, and I was hooked from the jump. He was always a genial fella, occasionally a mild ball buster, but Trebek was a stranger. He felt like an old pal or a beloved uncle every time we tuned in. Plus, Alex was also a huge hockey fan, and his surprise appearance at this year's draft made Ottawa's selection the highlight of the draft, I think because everybody knew what kind of shape he was in and the fact that he could do it, and you didn't know he was sick unless you were aware otherwise. Trebek also continued to work after his diagnosis. He was a model of grace and class as cancer ravaged his body. I mean, everybody was watching him every night and just astounded that not only he was still working, but still doing it at the high level he set so long ago. So, you know, it would have been so much easier for him to just stop working. Him, he was in his late 70s. He could have said, hey, I'm done. But he kept doing it. Now, I'm sure he did it for himself and his family, but he also did it to everybody who fell in love with Jeopardy, the millions and millions of us around the world. And I know the guy was 80 years old, but I never saw so many people moved by a fella passing away on Twitter. It's usually someone has something pissy to say, but that didn't happen with Alex. It's just such a huge loss for everybody. And we're terribly sad to see him go. Jeopardy was what Alex Trebek did, and he did it expertly up until 2 weeks before his death. They are going to run his final episodes. They're going to stop on December 25th for those of you who do watch and appreciate the show. So on behalf of everybody here at Spit and Chicklets, we just want to say thank you, Alex, for doing what he did, and personally for comforting a 12-year-old kid via trivia when I needed it, and also for being a model of excellence for the next 3.5 decades. So again, from everybody here at Spit and Chicklets, we send our deepest condolences to the family and friends of Alex Trebek. He's a legend, no doubt about that. I did mention the holidays, and the holidays are just around the corner, and we're going to be dropping some new ugly Christmas sweaters. G, what do people have look forward to this year?
So they have already dropped in the Barstool Sports store. That's barstoolsports.com/chicklets. We got some premium knit ones this year. We have a Pink Whitney premium knit, a Spit and Chicklets premium knit. We brought back the Man Rocket. We brought back the Sick League. So check that out. That's barstoolsports.com/chicklets. And let me just say, Black Friday is right around the corner, and boy, do we have a drop coming for Black Friday. So stay tuned for Black Friday. Buy your ugly sweaters now, and that's about all I got, all right?
Nice. Looking forward to it. These are the only sweaters I wear, Mikey. I'm not much of a sweater guy, but when they're ugly sweaters for Barstool and Chicklets, I'm all over them. So, all right, everybody. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode. Hopefully you enjoy it, and we'll be back in a week with a couple more interviews for you. Have a great week. And as always, we love to thank our terrific sponsors here on Spit and Chicklets. Big thanks to our longtime friends at New Amsterdam Vodka and Pink Whitney. Big thanks to our friends over at Theragun for taking care of our muscles. Huge thank you to everyone at Cross Country Mortgage. By all means, check them out if you're looking for a first mortgage or you want to refi. And of course, big thanks to our friends up at Budweiser Canada for helping us out. Take care, everybody, and have a fantastic week.
There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all. Bodies in the sand.